All right, are we all ready?
Now I gotta remember what I say.
Hello and welcome to the HR Social Hour Half Hour Podcast, special episode of HR Wonder Women. It's Anne and Wendy, and tonight we're talking with Elena Valentine. And this is episode number 3, and I have to say that I'm loving who we're getting to talk to, Anne, and super excited that we're starting to get suggestions. People are giving us names of people to talk to. So I'm excited about that. And Anne, you've had a chance to actually meet and chat with Elena in person recently.
I did, Wendy, and I am also excited. So I've had a chance to talk to Elena before in the past. We met via Twitter a while back. I had put something just kind of out to the HR tribe, something about job descriptions, and Elena reached out to me and talked about video, and we had some email back and forth and stuff. And even though she knew that given my situation, I was never going to be a client, she was super helpful and helped brainstorm and gave me ideas. And so I know that this is something that she's really, this is not just a business for Elena. This is something that she's really, really passionate about.
Awesome.
So I was just at the SHRM Diversity and Inclusion Conference a couple weeks back and got to sit in on Elena's presentation on storytelling. And it was really perfect because a lot of the themes throughout of the different presentations that I went to were about the importance of narrative storytelling in building empathy and in doing equity and inclusion work. And so to hear like, oh, storytelling is important, and then get to sit in and listen to Elena and Diamond talk about storytelling is important, and this is how you do it, was
yes.
Great. It was great. So, yeah, and then got to hang with her, too, a little bit, and hang out at the conference, and that was a lot of fun to get to know her better.
Oh, well, that's awesome. Well, so let's not keep anyone waiting any longer. Why don't you do the introduction, and we'll jump into our questions.
Sounds good. So, workplace filmmaker and design researcher, Elena spends her days leading the team at Skill Scout to bring jobs and company culture to life on video. Every workplace has a story to tell about the team, skills, environment, and output. Elena helps tell those stories to attract the right candidates for the job and keep existing employees happily where they are. As CEO, Elena wears many hats, but really geeks out on new media, 360, VR, POV videos, silent storytelling, and building Skill Scout's diverse workforce. She was recently named HR Superhero of the Year, which is so apt for us, by the Disrupt HR Chicago community. She's also the founder of Mezclick Media Collective, an organization that provides opportunities for female filmmakers of color to connect, partner, and build their skill sets as leaders and storytellers. Elena holds a BA in Spanish and Anthropology from Grinnell College and an AA in Recording Arts from Tribeca Flashpoint College. She currently resides in her hometown of Chicago with her rescue pup, Yofi, and her husband, Emilio, also known as her childhood school crush from the neighborhood. So with that, we are going to jump into questions.
Yes.
Great bio. Elena, as you know, Wendy and I are doing this podcast in order to amplify the voices of women of color in HR and other women in HR whose voices aren't always heard. You've got to focus on women of color in HR tech specifically. So talk to us about the unique challenges, or as Margaret Spence has said, roadblocks that women of color face in the HR tech setting.
Yeah, so when I think of women of color in HR tech, I'm really speaking about kind of two communities. One is just of HR tech entrepreneurs. And there are actually many women of color HR tech entrepreneurs. In fact, I see many of them leading the way for tech around diversity and inclusion. The other is just professionals who are working in HR tech. And I would say when it comes to women of color HR tech entrepreneurs, I would say that challenge is quite similar to other women in tech and women of color in tech generally, which really just happens to be around access and networking. So a lot of the work that Arlen Hamilton is doing and others of really shedding this light has everything to do with, you know, that we have investors on the other side of the table who have traditionally been white men who are going to invest and relate to other white men. And so that continues to be a problem regardless of industry. Certainly, I see that changing as we have more women investors and women of color investors that are coming into that space. But it certainly isn't necessarily unique to just the HR tech. And then certainly there's just the professionals in HR tech. And again, I see this being similar to other challenges that communities have, which is, you know, we're identifying, connecting with people who look and act like us. And those with the biggest megaphones just have traditionally been white men and women. There are, of course, many women of color in HR and in HR tech. And so in many ways, it has to do with awakening people of sorts to seeing their surroundings and understanding their privilege and how they can start to change that dynamic and opening doors to other women and women of color to both participate, contribute, and lead some of the change that we want to see in the world of HR and HR tech.
I think it was at Sarah Ann that was talking about how women of color are the largest group of entrepreneurs right now.
Yes. Yes.
So I, you know, when you were saying that, that just, it kind of resonated that there's, we're seeing that those women of color, they couldn't, you know, maybe we were seeing too many roadblocks in traditional work. And so let's go make our own, find our own road.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in a lot, yeah, it's like, you know, when you have that roadblock, when you come up across that challenge, you know, either you're going to get stuck or you're going to find a new solution. And if the solutions aren't out there, then we're going to build it.
So before we move on, I know we've got another scripted question, and Wendy, you'll just have to edit this. But one of the things that you were just saying, just to sort of follow up. So you were talking about how, you know, the on the other side of the table, you've got investors, and they typically are white men who typically then want to invest in people that look like them. And so part of the answer, obviously, is getting women of color and women in general to be investors. But what do you think we could be doing to kind of break down that barrier to get white men to be willing to invest in companies that are owned and run by women of color?
How do I answer this both politely and concisely? I think that when it comes to early startups, so much of this is about investing in that person, right?
Sure.
They are investing in Elena, which means that, you know, one, there has to be kind of a deep connection and a deep trust that can be made. And that just takes a lot longer than, say, again, someone who's on the other side of the table that looks and acts like them. So, you know, I think that there is work that's being done in this space. You know, I give credit to kind of programs and funds like Village Capital and Points of Light Civic Accelerator, where you have investors and communities that are being very conscious about this work, that it's not just about the innovative companies and approaches, but it's also about the leaders that are behind this who can provide very diverse perspectives to make the changes that we want to see in the world and business.
Yeah, I think too, it's an awakening that we, just because this is the way things have always happened, we don't have to keep doing it that way. We need to find new and different ways to do that and to find the people that are willing to do that with us. And you see it with, I was listening to a podcast on the election as I was driving to work this morning, and they were saying, you know, people were calling out Beto O'Rourke because he wasn't, quote unquote, campaigning correctly. He wasn't doing it the way that all other white males are doing it. And he almost beat Ted Cruz. So maybe we need to start looking at doing things differently.
I think it's amazing what happens when you can be vulnerable in what you don't know.
Yeah.
I think so much of the discomfort that we have around diversity and inclusion in other topics is this feeling of like, either one, we don't know this well enough, so we can't share it and we don't want to say the wrong thing. I think it's also that, you know, to talk about this means that we also have to talk about the privileges that we mm-hmm. come into these conversations with. And that is very, very hard mm-hmm. for people to do.
Yes.
The third is that we are not the center of the conversation. I think, you know, people like Beto, if we think about other kind of leaders in our HR space, people can do this. It's just kind of acknowledging those three things, being very comfortable with that. And oftentimes the best thing you can do is be a vulnerable leader to say, look, I don't know what I don't know, but I am here to foster space, to listen, to get comfortable with being uncomfortable, and bringing in people who can lead this work, who I can invest in and stand by mm-hmm. in doing so.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I think this is really going right into the next question, because we're talking about, you know, you don't know what you don't know. So you need to find out what you don't know. And by learning about people's stories, you can do that. And, you know, Elena, that's what you do. You help businesses tell stories, specifically with video. So tell us, you know, what is that power of narrative storytelling in business, and how can that help promote equity, inclusion, and diversity?
Love that question. Such a loaded question, but really also so simple. The shortest distance between two people is a story. It is a scientific fact that stories connect people. A good story enables people to relate to one another and in a way that they may not have been able to before. Stories humanize us. And considering the fact that companies are made up of people, nothing can be better to make these kinds of connections than people connecting with other people through the power of their own story. And at the heart of inclusion is connection. At the heart of inclusion is feeling like you belong and that you matter. And that's what stories do for us day in and day out, in and outside of our workplace. And so what I heavily promote is this idea that we can position HR to be chief human storytellers of their business, because that's what you're doing all day long. So not only are we tasked with, you know, the privilege of, you know, kind of supporting our people, but so often, especially in things like recruiting, we are helping to share the stories of others to get other people in the door.
Yes.
And so I think that if we can acknowledge that storytelling can really be a tool for human resource professionals to connect and to foster that kind of belonging, that's what the heart of inclusion is all about.
I think I found my new job title.
I know, I love that one, right?
That's a good one.
So in line with that, as we are the chief storytellers,
yes.
Why does video work, and why is it important to have these stories told through video? And what should we in HR be thinking about when we consider telling stories through video specifically?
Absolutely. So, of course, stories can be told in all sorts of ways, right? I certainly have a perspective and a strong suit on video and being able to combine those two. So, you know, we've already talked about making the case for, you know, storytelling generally. Mm-hmm. Now let's talk about making the case for video. How many of children and grandchildren right now, either on this podcast or to my hosts here, you know, how many of your kids are going on YouTube every day to learn everything from how to braid their hair, to touring the White House, to who knows what else, Wendy? What do your kids go on YouTube for?
Oh, my God. Learning how to draw, learning how to, Maggie's learned how to draw and do cartoons. She's learning how to make videos, how to do digital media. So, yeah, it's amazing what's out there on YouTube to learn how to do.
So given that, I mean, what we're seeing already is that media is the literacy of the 21st century. It's how we're learning. You know, and our brains are wired for visuals. 80% of our brain is dedicated to processing visuals. We retain 65% of what we see and hear versus what we read. So inherently, we're also visual learners. And so if we think about how our generations are currently learning and sharing and consuming content, that it should be almost a given that this is also how they're looking for jobs. It's also how they're trying to understand the opportunities that are out there and how they can develop themselves. And so we're just simply tapping into how we are already learning as humans. And so we certainly saw a power of using video when we started Skill Scout because we were inspired because of young people who lacked access and exposure to jobs. And so, you know, we saw that there was this, you know, powerful way to use video to get their attention, to get them excited about what this work can be. And so when, you know, we kind of first started the precursor to Skill Scout, it simply was, okay, we're going to just get a video camera. We're going to capture what these people are doing and share this with young people and see what they think. And it resonated with them. And they learned so much, and they were so much more informed about what that job was, coming in with questions about what that could be. So we saw that this wasn't about eliminating the hiring process, as it was making more meaningful connections for these young people around why they wanted to do the jobs that they wanted to do and what made them good fits. Questions we should be asking ourselves is, what's just most difficult for people to understand in things like a standard job description? What is it that people get wrong that we could just visualize more so that people could more inherently understand? You know, other questions can be around, you know, what are the nuances of our culture that are often just, again, most difficult to get across? Certainly one that we love is, what could just use more of a reality check, right? Our roles, our culture is not all sunshine and rainbows. So let's show, hey, you're going to be in a warehouse for, you know, 8 hours a day standing. It's 110 degrees in the summer and it's 30 degrees in the winter. You know, we want to be upfront about that. So, you know, definitely things like, you know, how can we showcase the challenges? And even more so, I would even push HR to think about what makes people quit and how can we push the envelope a bit, especially when it comes to some of these nuances, again, of our roles that make it difficult for people to be successful at. That we can show on video. So it's interesting that, yes, sometimes we are coming at this more from the challenges of, you know, what is it that people are getting mixed up on or misunderstanding? If we're struggling with turnover, are there things that we could be more upfront about that would make this a much more seamless process for candidates to self-screen in or self-screen out? And then the other, you know, question I would have HR ask is, you know, what stories are you continuously repeating? Or even more so, whose stories are you continuously repeating? So as someone who's in recruitment, you're probably telling your own story. You're also probably telling the stories of like five rock star employees who went from entry level to, you know, managerial level. Why not let, you know, enable them to do that job for you? Celebrate them by allowing them to share those stories that you in turn can then share with candidates and other employees as a way to increase engagement.
I love that. And I think there's something that's that makes it better when it's coming from that person. Mm-hmm. There's more meaning behind it. There's more feeling, more emotion behind it, because I can tell somebody's story, but that's, you know, third, fourth hand. I'm not going to get all of that emotion behind it. But if you can get that story from that person, there's just, it's awesome. It's just huge. I'm all about that.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so Elena, yeah. So you are a woman of color and you also an entrepreneur with a diverse staff, and you actually wrote about it. I think I saw it on either LinkedIn or Instagram following Skill Scout, where you were celebrating your diverse staff, and you know, you had one person who, you know, there's always somebody in the crowd that's going to poke at it. But let's talk about how you have gone about intentionally creating that diversity.
Yeah. So I think it comes a little bit with what our inspiration was, you know, knowing where we've come from. So the reason why we started Skill Scout in the first place was based on this premise that you cannot be what you cannot see. Again, we were working with young people who were being shut out from the hiring process in part because they lacked this access and exposure. So we're already coming from this space of seeing that hiring has to change. How we bring people into our organization has to change. How we engage people has to change if we are going to make meaningful diversity and inclusion initiatives in our organization. So I think that's important to share because this is why we started our work in the first place. And you know, yes, our goal is around supporting the storytelling efforts of other companies, but I inherently believe that if we are here to help you as companies broaden your talent pool, build a diverse workforce, tell your stories, that myself as a company need to have figured that out ourselves. I feel that as an HR-focused company, it is my responsibility to prototype, to model, to experiment what workforce practices could look like, what innovative workforce practices could look like, period. And, you know, because of that, you know, I realized that our workforce should be just as innovative or as important as the services and the products that we offer. And so my biggest insight a couple years ago was really realizing that the biggest impact that I can make as a leader is not what SkillScout can do for other companies, but what SkillScout can do on our own workforce. And so I've done that by unapologetically raising my hand to say that I manifest to become an employer of choice for women of color. I do that not to say that we don't have other people that we work with, but that I am making some intentional decisions around the investments I'm making in our time and in our financial resources to build communities that enable that to happen. Because as my mother always said, if you try to catch two rabbits, you'll never catch one. So I've put a very tight focus on who we want to attract and engage. Certainly how we share our jobs. I drink my own champagne. We share our jobs on video so that we can give our candidates, women of color and others, an understanding into what it's like to work at SkillScout and what they would be doing. We've also changed how we're assessing. We don't look at resumes. We are providing them with work sample exercises for us to be able to give candidates an opportunity to show what they can do. So we give them a video edit instead of just a resume. We're also really trying to push kind of the boundaries on what does it mean to build meaningful talent communities. And that's why we started Mezcla Media Collective in the first place. Is that we saw an opportunity to build this community of women of color media makers who wanted to connect, who wanted to learn from each other, who wanted to work with each other. It's not about putting SkillScout first, it's putting our community first. And in doing so, that only elevates the role that SkillScout can have in being able to work with these amazing women.
Oh, that's awesome. My absolute favorite HR leader quote is, it's that Richard Branson one where he says, you know, clients don't come first, my employees come first. If I take care of my employees, they'll take care of my clients. And you're just the embodiment of that, because, you know, in order to create a diverse workforce, people have to see a diverse workforce.
Yeah,
I can't see it, I don't believe it. So I love it, Elena.
I mean, really, it's become the biggest legacy of my life, right? Like, and I get emotional thinking about this, but like, the biggest change I'm making is providing first-time opportunities to jumpstart the careers of some of the most talented women and women of color I've ever met. And what an honor it is and a privilege it is for them to work with my organization to elevate SkillScout. And in doing so, to see that what we are kind of providing is an opportunity for them to grow their skill sets and their passions and make a living at the same time.
That's amazing.
That's awesome.
It's really awesome.
Yay. Well, all right, Elena, it is now time for everyone's favorite part of the HR Social Hour and HR Wonder Women, our half-hour question connection, where... and this has our nice women flavor that we added to it. But first off, networking, that's what we do. We're trying to connect people. So tell us how networking has helped you in your career and what's been really effective for you.
Oh my God, networking is everything, especially if the world of HR. You can't sell to HR people. Please. You have to build relationships with them. So there's a couple of things that I see that are kind of valuable to kind of how I've networked. One, it's about relationships first. It's not about the ask. And it's not about what that person can give me. That's been key. The other thing certainly is that, you know, I come in with humility and coming prepared with how I know them, how I admire them, and what I can learn from them. So I come in with this very kind of just natural curiosity about them. And because I'm a researcher at heart, I mean, it's what I did for a living, all I do is just ask questions to the point that I would, you know, hopefully the best successful networking for me is that 20 minutes into that conversation, they know nothing about me because all I've done is just ask questions about them.
Awesome.
That is awesome.
Hopefully that's been true, Anne, when we've met.
Yes, that has absolutely been true. Absolutely. So tell us about which women do you read or follow for professional insights?
So many, but I'll just tell you the one whose audiobook I just finished, and that's Brené Brown's Daring Greatly. She, you know, really has just done some great work and proven that the power of a vulnerable leader. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, I let my crying flag fly. I let my vulnerability flag fly. And I feel like Brené Brown now just gives me the data that it's good to do.
Right.
And it's good to be a vulnerable leader.
Oh, I love it. Elena, your favorite movie that features a strong female cast?
Steel Magnolias, hands down.
Oh, yes.
Good one.
Yes.
What about a favorite female musician or band?
Cardi B. All the way. You just watch out for my next Disrupt HR talk on what HR could learn from Cardi B. I haven't done it yet. I'm just saying, though, at some point, it's going to come out of me because she just gives me life around, you know, what it means to just, you know, put it out there. No holds bar. She is herself 110%. And again, there's a lot that as HR leaders, we can learn from that.
That's love awesome. It.
She brings her whole self to work, no matter what.
Nice. Well, Elena, I will invite you now to come to Brookings, South Dakota, July 25th, 2019, and give that talk.
Yes.
Awesome. Favorite female protagonist in a book?
I'll be honest, I don't read a lot of fiction, and this was super hard for me to come off the bat. So I will tell you my favorite protagonist in a movie, because that's what we do. It would be Leslie Ortiz, aka Michelle Rodriguez from Fast and Furious, because she is beautiful, and she is sassy, and she is smart, and she knows how to work with her hands. She doesn't take shit from no one. And it was just has been just remarkably powerful, just kind of throughout that story.
Awesome. That's awesome. Okay. So, see if I can do this. When you are not watching Steel Magnolias or listening to Cardi B or watching Fast and Furious, what do you like to do outside of work?
I go to a lot of movies. I'm sorry. I'm a filmmaker.
Don't apologize. That's what you do.
I see a lot of documentaries and a lot of films. I mean, that it's just what brings me joy, and it's what brings me creativity, and it's a privilege that I've been able to make that my life's purpose, even in my own work.
Wonderful. Well, Elena, this has been awesome and phenomenal. And I'm just gonna say, I'm looking forward to working with you on this. I think having Skill Scout as a partner for HR Wonder Woman is going to be fantastic. So we will definitely talk offline about this because I have so many great ideas in my head. Or so many ideas. I don't know if they're great or not. We'll get some mimosas and we'll decide. So thank you, Elena. So share with our listeners, how can people find you?
Everywhere. So find me on LinkedIn. I'm on Twitter. Skill Scouts on Instagram. I'm sure you'll know how to find me upon the release of this podcast episode.
Yeah. We will put all of your, all that in the show notes, how to link up to you. So, Anne, how about you?
So you can find me on LinkedIn and Facebook, but probably the place that I am the most is Twitter, where I am at Antonk, A-N-N-E-T-O-M-K. I also write a couple of blogs, but I haven't written in a while, but you could check out some of my old stuff. I write an HR blog, hrunderground.wordpress.com, and then I have a personal blog, theroadlesspedaled.wordpress.com. So feel free to check those out. I may have some content coming soon, so that would be pretty exciting.
Awesome. And me, best place to find me is Twitter. I am Wendell93. Happy to connect there, and you can find me almost any other social media by getting me on Twitter first. So definitely check me out there. Elena, Anne, thank you so much for joining me tonight. This has been a fantastic conversation. I've learned a lot, and I look forward to continuing the conversation in 2019. It's almost here. So thank you to all our listeners. And we will see you next time on the HR Social Hour and HR Wonder Women. Have a great day.
Woo!